Welcome to the Compliance Perspectives Podcast. I'm Adam Turtletail from the Society of Corporate Compliance and Ethics and Healthcare Compliance Association. Joining us today from London is Lisa Rosen. Lisa is the Chief Compliance Officer for the European Bank for Reconstruction and Development. Lisa, thanks for taking the time to talk to us.
Hi, Adam. Thanks for having me.
So, Lisa, first, can you tell us what the European Bank for Reconstruction and Development is and what its mission is? I think it's probably largely unfamiliar to most of our listeners.
Sure. The EBRD is an IFI. It's an international financial institution, and we were set up after the fall of the Berlin Wall in a post-Cold War era, and we were designed to help develop open and sustainable market economies in countries that were committed to and applying democratic principles. So we've invested in a total of 5,200 projects since our inception, and more than 130 billion euros. And to give you an idea, just last year, we invested 9.5 billion euros in 395 projects in 35 different economies. So the economies that we operate in span three different continents. We work in Central and Eastern Europe, Central Asia, stretching to Mongolia, and then the Middle East and North Africa. So over two-thirds of the EBRD's investments are in the private sector. And we believe that actually private sector investment is the key to long-term change to economic systems. And this goes beyond creating markets to doing something called achieving transition. And transition is defined by the six transition qualities. And those six qualities are competitive, green, inclusive, well-governed, resilient, and integrated. And we recognize at EBRD that integrity is an essential component of sustainable transition, and specifically in relation to the well-governed quality. And so the work that my office does is actually an explicit component of the EBRD's mission to support transition. And so through the lens of these six transition qualities, we push for systemic change, and then we link targeted financial investments with policy dialogue and engagement at the government level, and combine that with some hands-on technical assistance on the ground wherever it's needed. So it's a really inclusive, holistic approach to working with companies that were formerly communist and transitioning them to market economies.
That's a really ambitious goal, and I think we're all familiar with, you know, the challenges of the former communist countries, and at the same time, I think many are less familiar with what's going on in terms of the evolution of it. I have to say, I wrote about this for our blog, is I got asked to speak at a compliance conference in Mongolia, and, you know, there were 200 people there, and that, you know, we're seeing a lot of impetus for change, just not sort of on the big political level, but, you know, down into organizations and their compliance program. Now, you mentioned most of the investment is in the private sector. What kinds of businesses in the private sector do you typically work with?
Sure. Yeah, we work with lots of different businesses. My financial institutions, so we will lend to an FI and they will then on-lend to small and medium-sized businesses. We invest in energy, particularly renewables, of course, infrastructure, and what we call corporate, which includes manufacturing and services, property and tourism, and information and communication technology. And we can provide all different kinds of instruments, loans, we make equity investments, we provide guarantees to small and micro, medium-sized enterprises. It's the whole gamut of financial operations, but it's really specifically targeted at principally financial services, and as I said, renewable energy, infrastructure, and the corporate side.
So it's quite a gamut, as you mentioned, of organizations you're involved with and types of investments and loans you're making. Now, obviously, there's going to be a tremendous range of compliance risks there. Can you recap, you know, what some of them are? And I imagine anti-corruption is obviously going to be a very large portion of the risk area.
Yeah, it certainly is. I mean, corruption is prevalent in every country that we work in. And in fact, every country in the world, but there are lots of other kinds of compliance risks. I mean, we see risks in our investments in relation to the ownership structure. So it's really important to us, for example, that in all of our investments, we know who the ultimate beneficial owners are. We need to understand the origins of a company and its source of wealth. We look at their business practices and who their associates are. We look for the presence of politically exposed persons because that is a big compliance risk and a big red flag. We'll also look at things like the quality of the anti-money laundering and counter-terrorist financing controls. The use of offshore jurisdictions is another big compliance risk, and also any kind of links to international sanctions. So we look at all of these risks in relation to the investments that we make. We take a holistic look at the companies that we're investing in, and we consider whether or not they have an adequate integrity profile such that the EBRD is willing to associate our name and invest our money in these companies. And because we actually have a higher duty, since we're effectively owned by taxpayers worldwide, we need to make sure that the money that we invest is ultimately used for its intended purposes. So we analyze a whole spectrum of compliance risks, all of which, frankly, can be rolled up into ensuring that our investments are robust against the risk of corruption.
And it sounds like you got, strong controls there. Now, as you see all the places that an organization can go wrong, what are some of the mistakes you commonly see businesses making?
Well, a lot of businesses make the mistake that they have fantastic policies and procedures on paper, but they really struggle to implement them. I'd say that is the number one mistake, that they think everything is okay because you've got a beautiful policy and it's written down and it's stuck up on your website somewhere, but nobody knows what it means and they don't have the systems, the underlying systems and controls to effectuate what that policy is talking about. So an example will be, it's all well and good to have a gifts and entertainment policy in a company, for example. But if you don't have a mechanism for recording the receipt of gifts, and you don't have training as to what gifts can be received and what gifts can't be received, and why the receipt of gifts creates a risk, then it's not really very useful. Another risk that we see is in some of our countries, they tend to engage public officials or former public officials to sit on their boards or to become parts of their senior management. And that creates a lot of risk for a lot of reasons. I mean, obviously, there's a very real opportunity for the misuse of position, but it also creates a reputational risk that will make it hard for companies like the EBRD, or sorry, institutions like the EBRD or multinational companies to invest because of the perception of a conflict of interest. So those are two big areas where we see companies getting it wrong. And another area, I mean, I guess a final one that's worth a mention, and it's a problem not just in our countries of operations, but globally, is companies all often fall down when they try to manage the risks associated with the use of third parties. So you see national companies that are trying to expand regionally, and they know they need to have a local partner, but they don't vet those local partners properly. And so that creates extensive, serious problems.
Yeah, I mean, I think companies around the world have seen, how deep a problem it can cause. And so, while we're on the topic of problems and the results it causes, what are some of the potential consequences?
Well, they range. I mean, there are the obvious ones that are the a company can be investigated locally or internationally. You can get fined, and there's serious reputational damage. But the other thing that probably is less well known is that these risks and the potential consequences are that the companies that want to expand can't attract foreign direct investment, FDI, and they can't attract multilateral institutions because their controls simply aren't strong enough. So So they have the same risk that any OECD country would face in terms of being fined or sanctioned, but they also have an ongoing risk that they won't be able to expand their operations in the way that they want to because they can't get the kind of investment that they want.
Yeah, that's difficult. I mean, you know, so much of the success of these countries as a whole will depend on companies' ability to expand and have a dynamic economy. And, you know, if they trip over these kinds of risk areas, it's going to be difficult. So let's go back to the bank itself. And let's talk a little bit about your role and the role of the compliance team within the bank. You know, how much of the work is more internal in terms of making sure there's adequate internal controls and they're being followed, and how much of it is external in terms of outreach to businesses that are, you know, receiving funds?
Well, it's both, actually. I mean, I would say that the split is nearly 50-50. I mean, most importantly, our internal facing work, it relates to our own internal ethics and our own internal code of conduct and our own internal training. Because we try, of course, to be beacons of integrity. It's really important that we are personifying the values that we expect from our countries of operations and the companies that we invest in. So we have to live by the standards that we preach. But a lot of it is external, and our external facing work is ensuring that we are comfortable with the companies that we are investing in. So we do this rigorous ex ante due diligence process. And we also work with companies to try to help them along their own reform agenda. So we may put in place as a condition of our financing the requirement to implement an anti-corruption action plan. So that's one way where we're engaging with the external world and our potential clients. But we also are really prevalent amongst the international financial institutions that are helping to shape the anti-corruption agenda. So we are working closely and are observers on the Financial Action Task Force. We partner to deliver business integrity seminars with the OECD. We also develop anti-money laundering training to be rolled out for the big financial institutions in our countries of operations. And then when things go wrong, we also have an investigations team, again, externally facing, that looks to sanction companies that have committed wrongdoing to make sure that they can no longer participate in the multilateral system and benefit from funds. Where possible, we've actually recently started to look at trying to reform those companies. So our end goal really to achieve transition is to make sure that we have, again, a very holistic view where we are beacons of integrity internally. We try to invest in companies that are reflecting those standards, and we do rigorous due diligence to make sure that they do. Sometimes we attach conditions to our investment. When it all goes wrong, or if it all goes wrong, hopefully it won't, we then investigate and, where appropriate, sanction or help remediate.
Well, that's certainly a very large and laudable charge. Lisa, thank you for your work. Thank you for sharing your expertise with us. I want to thank all of you for taking the time to listen. I'm Adam Turteltaub from SCCE and HCCA saying, I hope we're able to expand your compliance perspective.